Good afternoon, everyone. Good evening. This is Veronica Entwistle, and you've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And who are Paradigm Shifters? Are people that are tweaking us, helping us evolve the whole collective by being innovative and conscious and so on. And today's guest, today's Paradigm Shifter, is Ayman Sawaf, and he wrote recently Sacred Commerce, The Rise of the Global Citizen, and I'm really excited to talk with Ayman. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Veronica.
I really love this book, and in your conversation in this book, it's really, it's very challenging to understand the flow of consciousness in the world economic situation. That's kind of where I went with it right away. Do you want to talk about, I guess we should talk first about what sacred commerce means, but I also am excited for you to talk about the merchant priesthood.
Okay, well, you know, coming out from my own experience as a businessman, I grew up in a business family, and although I loved being a merchant and a businessman, I was always appalled at what business end up creating and messing up in our relationship, you know, with God, our relationship with nature, our relationship with each other. And
many consider those in direct opposition, don't they?
Exactly. And I always felt that it should be something beyond in commerce and business than just making money. And at the same time, I didn't want to act, you know, like I experienced everything from being extreme, you know, socialist, communist, let's see where is the free equality is, all the way to all sides, and not until I found and discovered my spirituality. And in one of my trips to Egypt, on my honeymoon with Rowan, my wife, we were on a cruise in the Nile, and at the temple of Philae, at the temple of Isis, the group that we were with went ahead of us, and Rowan stopped for a few minutes to change the film in her camera. And we got those Egyptian guides or salespeople around the sacred sites come to us, and they wanted to take our picture next to a statue, a big stone. And so we refused, but they insisted and persisted. And so speaking Arabic, I told them, please leave us alone. We have no money, and we don't need your money, they said. And we won't just take your picture next to the stone. So just to get rid of them, we took that picture. Coming back, Kevin, our friend, the guide, said, well, why were you late? And we explained the story. And he said, knowing that we are business people, do you know who this is? And we said, no. He said, this is God Bes. This is the god of commerce of all Egypt. He is the one, the patron of all the merchant priesthood. And when he said the word merchant priesthood, me and Rowan looked at each other in the eye. We were like we were shocked by a current, by like a spiritual current. We always knew business was beyond making money. It was a spiritual path. It was a path to our self-realization, enlightenment. And this is not about, so what happened to commerce, you know, in commerce in the past, we discovered through our research that commerce was balanced and sacred by its nature. It was considered as a gift from the gods and the goddesses, as a means to lift people out of poverty and survival into abundance and prosperity.
But that was a while ago, wasn't it, Ayman?
Absolutely. I mean, it always is that tool. This is, you know, like 6,000 years ago. And the first records we have, really, of sacred commerce and the merchant priesthood who practiced sacred commerce during the reign of Queen Hatshepsut, 1400 BC. That's where we saw the first, you know, in stone and in writing that there were certain group of priests, not unlike the healing priests or the temple priests. They were called the merchant priests, who took business as spiritual path, and they used business as a tool to serve humanity and God's people. So that's where we discovered that. And what happened to business is that chauvinism hit the fan along the way and ripped out the sacred and the feminine out of commerce and became the unconscious exchange of goods and services that we experience today.
Well, when was that? That was like how many years before Christ?
That's really just after Queen Hatshepsut. Her stepson took over. See, Queen Hatshepsut had the 27th reign, one of the longest reign in Egypt. And it was the most prosperous, not one drop of blood was shed. And she elevated the merchant priests to the highest level and opened trade routes everywhere around the country. And she opened and communicated with other cultures and brought art and nation and communications with the other cultures through commerce. comes after her stepson, Thutmose III, was very angry at his stepmother because she took the throne before him.
Hmm.
And he destroyed everything that has to do with her and the feminine and with women.
But wait a sec, that was like 4,000 years ago?
No, that was more like 1,200 years ago.
Okay.
Now, obviously, chauvinism went up and down along the ages, but really, where it's, you know, that's where the beginning of it. And I mean, you know, don't quote me on it. This is, you know, from the Egyptian history part. That's where we note that there is, you know, the feminine and the sacred start getting ripped out of commerce from that activity.
Hmm.
Became unconscious exchange. I laugh and I joke sometimes. I say that's when the business, the men became busyness men, and women end up being sexy terriers.
That was a long time ago. You know what? You went really fast through the picture taking along the Nile. Were they seeing you as the embodiment of the merchant?
I don't know. It was just, those five guys just showed up, took our picture and disappeared. And we didn't really bother to ask what it is until Kevin asked us, you know, why are you late? And we said, I don't know, just those guys just drove us crazy. They want to take our picture. And him looking at the picture, knowing the Egyptian mythology and history, knowing that we are business people, smiled at the coincidence and said, do you know who this is? This is God best, you know, of the God of business. So we smiled at what a great coincidence. And that's basically, that experience kind of triggered the wanting to, that, you know, like if there is a God for commerce and there is merchant priesthood, surely there are temples and business was a spiritual path and there's the whole thing to explore and discover, and that's what we went to explore.
Well, and it seems to me that that resonates with you, that that's your part of the stream of that kind of priest, right?
Absolutely.
Yes.
We joke in the book that we, in one chapter of the book, talks about the dream of the merchant priesthood, you know, and what they dreamt that one day in our evolution of humanity, we reach the stage of conscious evolution, which we are now exploring, and where the world will become one big global village interacting each other through sacred commerce. And where there will be the rise of the global citizen, those people who will basically say, we cannot depend or count on religion or big government or multinational corporation to solve the issues of the global village coming together. We need to take this full responsibility ourselves. And obviously, a lot of the people who have been, the last 20 years, have moved from unconscious commerce to conscious commerce and the green sustainable businesses and practices that is now wide mainstream, and there's a green MBA movement and universities that teaches this. So that unconsciousness of commerce starting to become more and more conscious. And we say that there is one more step. It's going to go back to its sacred nature. It's going to go to create beyond just a return on investment and return as the green movement or the sustainable return on the return to the planet and return to the people who created the success. So they call it the three bottom line, three P's, profit, planet, and people. And they will find out that there is more than that. There's a return to self. There is a spiritual return. There's spirituality, the relationship with God, the relationship with themselves, the relationship with their higher self, the commerce of their emotions and their feelings and their thoughts and their dreams. And all that is basically, let's sum it in, why are they doing this? How does it make them more happy? How does it make them more beautiful, more good, more true, more loving, more understanding?
More fulfilled.
Exactly, more fulfilled in another term. Exactly, all of those terms. You know, because after all, that's why we do anything. We do that because we want to be more loving and we want to receive love and we want to be closer to God.
But many people feel more victimized. They don't feel that they have that opportunity because they're busy working, right? So you get that kind of conundrum. I want to ask you this other thing. It seems like as I'm reading the book, which I find absolutely fascinating, that you're talking about the flow, this flow of the merchant priesthood comes kind of undulates through the collective. Is that right? It, over time, it sort of flows back in, and it's flowing in now, along
yes,
with the...
You know, we claim that the merchant priest is rising in all of us. You know, it's that those qualities of becoming, balancing our intelligence, bringing back the feminine and the sacred into our life, into our work, that is basically the embodiment of what the merchant priest did. They were the people who really protected the feminine and the sacred energies in society, in the collective, because they knew, because, and they are the one who really fought against chauvinism. They are the one who fought for human rights, for, you know, the expansion and the strengthening of democracy around the world, because they knew that unless we have a very democratic and very transparent and free society, it will be hard for those tools of commerce, for those tools of social interaction, not to be abused by a certain group, you know, mm-hmm. and against others and so on.
Well, I love when you describe the roles that they had in the marketplace or in the community. Can you talk a bit about that, how vibrationally they held the... I'll let you say.
You know, they spent the first 20 years of their life in training into building and developing their emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. And the way they start emotional intelligence, and we can maybe talk about that later on, I've written a book before, Sacred Commerce, called Executive EQ, Emotional Intelligence in Leadership and Organization, where we developed the concept of how we want to build emotional intelligence, starting with emotional literacy all the way to emotional alchemy. So the merchant priests, when they were taken as infants from their homes to become merchant priests in the priesthood, they would train them into the first phase of emotional literacy. Literacy is what is reading and writing, the alphabet, and the 1, 2, 3 of our feelings. So they taught them how to read feelings, which is basically being empathic. So 20 years of incredible experience and exploration and empathy, which is beyond that what we just feel other people's feeling and their sorrow or their joy. They were able to sit in the marketplace, in the corner of that marketplace, in a meditation state. Well, all the merchants are doing their commerce, and there's a lot of the energies of anger and fear and jealousies and moving everywhere. They would, in their energy field, in their body-mind chamber, suck in all that energies of anger, fear, and jealousies. With their state of joy, change, transmute those emotions, those energies in motion, into their higher octave of passion, compassion, and empathy, and infuse them back in the environment of the marketplace, thus balancing the psychic state of the marketplace.
Hmm.
Remember, society was not mature enough those days. So the people did not really, there was all immersion priests basically took care of the emotional side or life of humanity as it was growing up.
But I noticed that we might be more mature, but we still have jealousy, greed, fear, and anger, which is out of control in the marketplace, don't we?
Absolutely. That's why it is unconscious. See, once there was more consciousness and awareness, that unconsciousness becomes conscious. But then you take it to the sacred, that's when the bridge between conscious commerce and sacred commerce, that's when you bring the concept of emotional intelligence. Now, once you bring that, that is the bridge between personal development and spiritual development. So the more we become in an ideal paradigm, an ideal society, kids will learn emotional literacy. So when they're teenager, they will move to the second cornerstone of emotional intelligence, which is called emotional fitness, the practice of those muscles, of emotional muscles that basically strengthen the life skills of character and integrity and relationship and leadership that the teenager develop.
So it's not just a judgment of these feelings. It's actually holding them in awareness and learning to transform them or transmute them, eh?
Right. See, one of the most beautiful thing about the training of the merchant priesthood, the last part was emotional alchemy. They knew, like chemistry, you put oxygen plus hydrogen, you create water. They knew that emotions are electromagnetic energy released from the brain, hormones, and so on. And when many chemicals are secreted together, there is a combination, there is a synergy, there is a resonance, there is a new energy that comes up. So they knew that they had something called the drop of joy technique. If they take one drop of joy over anger, that raw energy of anger becomes courage. Now, when you put one drop of joy over courage, now there's a new energy, the new chemistry, and it turns to passion.
Hmm.
Notice those three energy: anger, courage, passion. You know, you lift, you lift, you lift to the higher octave. And how do people, how do they drop joy? It's just by feeling it. They would feel certain anger, and they would just feel joy. And now there's two chemistries, there's two chemicals, you know, released in the brain, one adding to another one, and they create passion. Sometimes in my own practice, sometimes I'm finishing a project, I don't have the last five, the last 10 minutes, the last 10% of the project takes forever, and I don't have the passion and the enthusiasm to do it. So I sit in meditation, and I conjure anger at will. For 1 or 2 minutes, I start feeling anger by imagining my son did something, or my father, whatever, long time ago. And now that I'm secreting those hormones in my brain, I start now, I stop the memory, and now I start feeling joy by remembering or conjuring a moment of joy. And now suddenly there's more chemistry, there's more chemicals are secreted of joy. Together, after 3-4 minutes, you know, behind view, that magic, you know, that chemistry, that turns into an energy in the body called passion. I open my eyes and I feel that intense energy and passion that suddenly, hip, and in 5 minutes I finish everything I wanted to do, you know, which I've been delaying and procrastinating for so long.
Oh, that's what I want to say. We'll go back to the merchant priesthood just for a minute. That I was interested in the fact that you said in your book that these people were that it was passed down through spirit, through the souls, so that someone who was going to be a merchant priest would have brought it through in his soul, and it would be noted when he was a child, sort of like the Dalai Lama's chosen and the Rinpoche's.
Right. When the baby was born in Egypt, in old Egypt, the old merchant priest would go to the families, and through a series of tests, not unlike the Lamas in Tibet, where they go out to find out the reincarnation of a master, they would usually put next to that child the objects of or symbols of the merchant priesthood, amongst many other objects, like the leopard skin was one of their symbols. And if they see the child gravitate and play with certain of those objects and so on, they would do more tests, listen to their their heartbeat and the lower stomach movement, and they would replicate that through a drum, and if they would match or resonate together, somehow through a series of tests, they will find out that, they do have, most likely they were in a past lifetime in the merchant priesthood. And they will, with permission of parents, they will of course take them directly to the temples and start training them in the merchant priesthood.
So do you think that you were in that, did you check your own drum beat for starters? And the, and the second thing is,
we all have that energy of the merchant priest and priestess in all of us. These days, we don't need to be in priesthood or in a secret society or in a brotherhood or sisterhood. You know, we are individuals coming together as one, you know, to create a new world, you know, and that's the dream of the merchant priesthood.
Okay, so, but I also see it's this resonance in you, and I'm going, you've got to be one. I just feel like it.
Well, yes, okay, if you insist, I did explore a few past lifetimes of mine, and I do know of a few of them where I was involved heavily in the merchant priesthood in old Egypt and in other Renaissance group in Europe during the Renaissance days and so on.
Wonderful. I really just see that. It's a wonderful thing to experience. So where is it all going? I feel like jumping around because there's so much I want to ask you, but where is it all going right now? Like, can you talk about how people can be involved more in sacred commerce? What does it look like? How can they experience it?
Well, yes, in many, many ways. First one is, this is again, it's not my concept. It's something I came up with. I added my own stuff to it. And we're hoping that this would become not necessarily a movement as such, an organization, but I don't know if you're familiar with what they call Wikipedia or the encyclopedia.
A little bit, yeah.
So it's basically people can go to sacredcommerce.com, and especially in the next few days when we launch our social media network. So it's a small Facebook for people who want to be involved in sacred commerce and conscious commerce. They can become member and do all the networking activities. But what they can do is they can co-create the book and the ideas with us. So this book, Sacred Commerce, every year is going to be reprinted with the additions of thousands of people around the world who will contribute, who will add a chapter here, they will add their own story, they will critique certain points, they will beef up some of the stories. So every year the book will be reprinted, the new, relevant, fresh with the times, with the minds of many. Maybe in 4 or 5 years, whatever we started in that book will disappear, and the minds of many around the world will produce a much better book, and will continuously improve that ideal of sacred commerce. That's one way of contributing.
And they just go into Wikipedia, Sacred Commerce?
No, they will go to our website, sacredcommerce.com, which is the social network, and they will find a place called Collaborate.
Okay.
And we will be all working, the whole community will be adding on this book and, re-debating it and all kind of stuff. And there will be an editor at the end of the year who will take the best out of the best and re-edit the book in a new format.
Excellent. So it's kind of a win-win for
us. One of the first ever living book, that will be, alive every year,
Oh, that's very exciting. So tell us something about businesses that you know of or that you've been involved in or something that have to do with this principle or using this principle.
Well, sacred commerce really is not a concept for a business. It is really a spiritual path for the individual.
Okay.
Who practice conscious
commerce. So it could be any business, and it's just your attitude and your approach and your integrity.
Right. But in another term, we define sacred commerce as the following. And if you follow the definition, you will find how you can make your business sacred. The definition of sacred commerce is the following. Sacred commerce is the participation of the community in the exchange of information, product, and services that contribute to the revealing of the divine, beauty, goodness, and truth in all. Now, I will go through this in detail. We call it participation, but we don't spell it like participation. We spell it P-A-R-T-Y-C-Patient.
That sounds like you.
Participation source in joy and celebration, in choice and responsibility, not out of a duty and obligation. That's the first condition. So it is out of fun, out of preference, out of choice of the community, of course, and the exchange, which is commerce. But in what kind of commerce? That commerce should bring or reveal the beauty, the goodness, and truth of the people who are contributing or participating in it. A sacred commerce is about bringing enlightenment, is about bringing happiness. If your business does not create happiness for you and others, then it's not sacred. It might make money, it might help the environment, and that's fantastic, but it's not sacred. I don't know if you've been familiar with the latest news about the King of Bhutan. The King of Bhutan, 3 years ago, wanted to abdicate and bring democracy to his people. And everybody rebelled. No, we love you, our king. We don't want democracy. We don't want global village. He said, no, it's coming sooner or later. Get ready. So he spent the last 2 years training his people in democracy, creating mock elections, forcing people to go into the street and demonstrate peacefully, and so on. 2 weeks ago, they had their first real election, and he abdicated. Two parties won the election. One is called Prosperity Party, and the other one called Peace and Harmony. Now, those two parties, with the king who abdicated, decided that they are going to measure the success of their country, not with the GNP, the gross national product, like all nations measure their wealth, but through the gross national happiness, GNH.
That's great.
And not only that, he decided that when he formed the government, not only there is the ministry or the government of interior and defense and finance, but there is the ministry of happiness. There is a special minister in the government who is in charge of that pursuit of happiness. You remember that in the Constitution? We forgot about it. Liberty, life and the pursuit of happiness. That is a sacred country. That is a sacred nation. So sacred commerce is a commerce that brings you happiness to you and others, that brings you closer to God, that brings you, that is in tune with your destiny, that makes you more loving, And that is, so if those, if your qualities of your business bring those qualities, then it is sacred.
Hmm. That's wonderful, eh? I wonder, yeah. I hope they can maybe spread that all over the world. That'd be just wonderful. Tell us about the court of Akhenaten.
Yeah, Akhenaten, as you probably, most people know him, him and his wife Nefertiti, which is even more famous than him. Akhenaten and Nefertiti were some of the latest, the end of the Egyptian pharaoh cycle before Ramses II and then the decline of the empire. They were the he was the head of the merchant priesthood who promoted the merchant priest to the highest level and demoted all the other priests. Actually, he even demoted all the gods, and he said there's only one god, the Ra god. And of course, and then he brought, created basically the one god religion, and he brought in his wife Nefertiti to be his equal partner, so that the beginning of feminism, or bringing back the feminine and the sacred into government and life and culture. And but he went so overboard with trying to spiritualize matter that he didn't notice the that all the other priests were and all the other gods very angry with him for losing their power, conspired to kill him and his wife. He basically escaped, but before he escaped with Nefertiti, he passed on the mysteries of the merchant priesthood and their secrets to his advisor and Moses. Moses passed them on to highly ranked Hebrew people, and as they moved on to Israel, to create Israel, and, he downloaded a distilled version of those mysteries and secrets. They call them the Ten Commandments. And that moved on. So Akhenaten dreamt of the whole world being a global village, that the whole Mediterranean Sea basin will be dotted with temples, and they're all marketplaces where everybody is doing commerce and exchanging cultures and art and beauty and you know, basically, you know, creating a social intercourse between nations and cultures.
So you believe he is a very high being, right?
Absolutely, he was.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things I read, it said that they were at such a high vibration that it seemed like they could have left their bodies, right?
You know, until now they have not found their mummies and so on. Mm-hmm. They claim that they disappeared in light, you know, and they just basically blew up in light, or they went through the pyramid and dematerialized. But that's the legend. We don't know what's the truth or not, but you know, until we find their bodies, we can assume that they disappeared without everybody else.
And there were several things that you mentioned. One of them, this is right at the very beginning of the book, where you talk about the temples and the way the lights and follow the ley lines so that people would be sleeping in harmony with their circadian rhythms and so on.
Right.
And you also mentioned how their concern was that abundance would flow, or prosperity would flow, to all people, not just to select few. Do you think that's actually, and that was a long time ago, right?
Yes. You know, the purpose of the merchant priesthood, after the Moses took over the secret and basically the baton, he passed on the baton to him, and who, when the when the destruction of the Temple of Jerusalem in the Solomon Temple, and all the scrolls went into hiding, or with only very few highly ranked Essenes, when the Mount Templar, when the night came with the Crusades, if you remember from the story of the Da Vinci Code, how one of those French lords thought that he is really descended of the blood of Jesus, and he wanted to prove this, and basically he finance the first crusade, or one of the financiers. When they got to Jerusalem, while everybody was busy, you know, doing what they're doing, him and his knights started to look for the scrolls and dig into the mount, and they found basically the scrolls of the merchant priesthood and their mysteries, and that's what, when they turned, basically the guy divorced his wife. He discovered the truth. He didn't find, of course, the proof that he is a descendant of blood of Jesus. Actually, he even dropped the whole idea, and he created the Knight Templar based on the merchant priesthood mysteries and secrets.
But he divorced his wife? Why did he do that?
Excuse me?
Did you say he divorced his wife?
Yes, because suddenly he divorced his wife, he turned spiritual, and he became monastic warrior, and he created the Knight Templar, and suddenly they became, you know, those brotherhood who became celibate and just devoted to God and to humanity. And on one side, they were, you know, building all the cathedral in Europe and financing kings and popes. But part secretly, they were practicing a different kind of spirituality, which is the metaphysics that they discovered, you know, in the scrolls of the merchant priesthood. Now, what are those secrets? That number one, you create your own reality. I mean, it was so now it's for everybody. Now it is a known fact. Everybody believed that it's own reality. But you know, thousands of years ago, that was blasphemous. Mm-hmm. Everything was happens, good or bad, because of the gods. You know, mm-hmm. you know. So the idea that you can create your own reality 100%. You know, during those days was, wow, that's a secret. The other one, that you can have a relationship with God direct. You don't need a religion, you know, and so on. And that you don't only have a relationship of love or fear with God, but you can have a relationship of partnership and co-creation. That was blasphemous, too. That's why they had to keep those secrets. They found the secret of emotional alchemy and how to transmute and transform emotions and how to create reality through resonance. The art, the secret of resonance, you know, and so on. You know, they discovered the path of beauty, you know, and that's why they built all those most beautiful cathedral and they, you know, financed the Renaissance and so on. So
and the cathedrals were meant to enhance the resonances, right? To bring
absolutely,
the
it's a transcendent energy. Mm-hmm. In the presence of beauty, you transcend stuff. So people were not emotionally mature. That's okay. Go to church, immerse yourself in the beauty, and just let beauty do its work.
Well, that's actually a very wonderful story. I've never heard it told that way. So let's go back to conscious evolution, and can you talk a little bit about commerce these days and what's going on?
Well, there's really beautiful things happening in commerce. It's definitely becoming more and more conscious. The concept, you know, in the past, you know, hundreds of years, the what, the return on investment, the money was the most important thing, and people had to compromise the means, you know, to justify the bottom line. And that's what created all the problems, you know, in the world, you know, and disconnections with nature and wars and so on. Now that the business, in the last 20 years, there's the rise of what we call the conscious consumer. Those coming from the old hippie days to the new agers to the green movement, those new people rising saying, hey, I want more consciousness and I need to know, I need to be aware, what's in this product? What is it made of? How does it impact my health, the environment? You know, is it fair trade? Who's doing it? Where is it made? That kind of a new consciousness and awareness in that consumer base saw the huge group of old business people who were disappointed, like me, with the old way of commerce, jump on the bandwagon and starting to supply this new consumer base. But very slowly, very quickly, actually, that consciousness and that awareness started to percolate in the management style of those corporations. Now, they start talking about triple bottom line, how we're helping the environment, how we're doing this, and how we're providing yoga classes to our employees, and how their well-being is important for us as much as the return on investment. And so we saw in the last 20 years the rise of conscious commerce or conscious business, which is a beautiful thing, and now it's exploding everywhere in the world. Issues of transparency, of trust, of intimacy with your clients, you know, just beyond just being there in their face, plugging into them anything. All this new technology online, social networking and others, is just basically making everything far more transparent. Out of that, you know, in the last few years, we're starting to feel the renaissance and of sacred commerce. So moving out of conscious commerce, the whole concept of spirituality and business, that they go hand in hand. Actually, spirituality is your business. And business is your spirituality. And the why we do things are even more important than the how and the what. And actually, if taken in the sacred order of why, how, and then what, the bottom line, the old bottom line, is more than guaranteed. Actually, it's more than expected and imagined. The portal to the miracles is open. But if you take it from the old business paradigm, start with the what, and then the how, and then the what. We compromise sometimes the means, and we have to dictate the what. And that could be quite disastrous, you know, to one's personal development and even financial success.
Okay, so you have a little list of things that tell people. I have to flip through my book and find my little list of exactly what it takes to be on a sacred commerce or conscious sacred commerce a role. And it's about, really, it's about your job. Your productivity fulfills, it gives you happiness, fulfillment, and a sense of your purpose and so on. That's first and foremost, isn't it?
That's basically the bottom line. I mean, I always like the definition of my friend Lazarus. When you talk about what is sacred, and the sacred, he says, it's a resonance that is coming from four energies. One of them is love, one of them is mystery, one of them is enchantment, and one of them is, I can't remember now. But so when you have those four energies coming together, so if you're, the more your business is loving to you and Allah, the more it's enchanting you, the more it has that mystery, there's something unknown, there's something, you know, there's something more in it, you know. The more it is enchanting, that, you know, that enchantment, that song, that music, that call, that seduction that calls you home, you know. So whenever it becomes, starts creating those qualities beyond just happiness, the more it turns to that concept of beauty and spirituality, the more it becomes more and more sacred.
Yeah, I mean, that really makes sense. So what about, let me see, you've created absolutely wonderful music, haven't you? And you've created...
Yes, for the fun of it, I've composed and produced 12 albums.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you can go to imanmusic.com and you can listen to them for free.
What is it, imanmusic.com?
Imanmusic.com, AYMAN music.com.
And you can listen to them for free, or people can order them, right?
They can download them, yeah. And I've done 12 albums and all kinds of music, from rock music to New Age music, film music, meditation music.
And you did it as part of your own fulfillment and enchantment, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's a hobby that went overboard, I guess. People say 12 albums. That's a hobby that went crazy. every year or every 2 years, I just sit down and just play music, and I just love music. It's my best friend.
And then Rowan, your wife, you and Rowan created Earth TV, URTH.TV?
Yes, Rowan, my dear Rowan, my beautiful wife and partner. Yes, we have created actually dozens of, over the years, dozens of conscious businesses, and the latest one is we are creating the wholelife.com or .communities, where we'll be having 500 plus mini social media network in one place. Not unlike what we see now. You saw Earth.tv, which we launched 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Earth TV is spelled URTH.tv, which is basically a small community for the green conscious consumers. This will be going to become one channel amongst hundreds of them on the wholelife.com. As you know, wholelife, for 25 years, it's known as the Whole Life Expo and Conferences, the 25-year brand that pioneered the whole New Asian spiritual movement across the country.
So this is going to be wholelife.com. It's kind of a social network. Is that what I'm understanding?
Yes, it's going to be the mother of all social networks. Underneath that, you can scroll 300-400 networks. So you can find the sacredcommerce.com community. You can find the Dr. Gabriel Cousins community, you can find the yoga community. Each one of those is a social network around that topic or around that teacher or authors, and there's commerce and there is activities and there is collaboration and non-profit and so on.
And this is another one of your ideas that brings enchantment, right?
Hey, absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's so much enchantment and fun.
What's exciting to me is that it's increasing. You're increasing that flow around the world, which says that abundance is there for all of us, not just a few people, right?
Lazarus have a beautiful explanation between abundance and prosperity. Abundance is, you know, unlike what people think, amassing money or product or project. It's really having access to resources. But what abundance, what prosperity is really the enjoyment of that abundance. And I really experience far more prosperity than abundance, because I really enjoy what I'm doing. I really have fun doing it. And when you do that, it becomes more and more sacred.
I love that. Now, Ayman, you haven't told us much about yourself, but I know you had a great, you transformed quite a bit some years back, didn't you, just get onto your spiritual path. Would you like to talk about that for a few minutes?
Well, you mean the pursuit of fun.
The pursuit of fun. And it's never stopped.
My spiritual fun. I don't know if you know of a famous author and a good friend called Swami Vivekananda.
Yes, I interviewed him one day.
He coined the term called fundamentalist. Fundamental. So I'm a true fundamentalist.
That's great.
I discovered the fun in fundamentalism, and I got into my spirituality. I call it in the pursuit of the wow. But yeah, I discovered actually, coming from my own growing up and dysfunction and health crisis, I discovered my emotions and feelings, and I had no clue that they had anything to do with me. And after working with healing myself emotionally and saw the magic that had happened, not only in my health but in my realities, I couldn't believe that only emotions and feeling could do that. So I started immersing myself more in the understanding emotions and energies. And
so you had to learn about emotions because of your unwellness, eh?
Exactly. It was from a health crisis. And being kind of getting this very disappointed with life, getting bored, not knowing what to do. So I discovered emotions, and that, I said, how come they never teach us this? And that's where I coined the term emotional literacy 15 years ago, and developed the first curriculum for schools and home, the first children emotional literacy curriculum.
Well, what is it about? How do you start getting children to know about jealousies and stuff?
Well, if you go to kidseq.com,
okay.
EQ means emotional quotient, so like IQ, EQ. When you go to kidseq.com, you will see there's a series of 28 books. Every emotion comes into a three-set book. So let's say anger. There's a storybook. There is a parent guide with techniques and exercises. And there is an activity coloring book for the child that deals with that emotion and play with it consciously. So those three series of books.
Did they get taken into a school?
Yes, they can. They teach them in schools sometimes, but they're mostly made for homes. But a lot of school teachers, use the activity books a lot and the coloring books in their classroom. They download them from our website and they pack. They copy them and they distribute them to the kids.
Did you get any resistance to this sort of thing?
Excuse me?
Did you get any resistance to this?
In the last 15 years I've been doing this, bringing emotional literacy to homes and schools, I have not really found a lot of resistance. The only resistance I found is when I tried sometimes to bring it to the school system, and I found some resistance from some parents that say, well, maybe emotions, because when you say emotional literacy, people right away think of emotional healing. So they think this needs to be a psychologist or should be a pastor or a priest or something to handle this.
Mm-hmm.
But really, emotional literacy is not about healing emotions. It's about, being empowered with that language of relationships and that energy and access to information that is coded within it. So, yes, there is a resistance from people who didn't really understand what emotional literacy and thought it was emotional healing and thought, hey, maybe this is not the job of school or teachers,
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting.
We are launching the field. If you go, we are launching a mega campaign for emotional literacy called the FEEL.org, FEEL.org. Stands for Foundation in Education and Emotional Literacy. It's our nonprofit. And we are launching the 1 million signature campaign that you can sign and do all kinds of activities to promote emotional literacy. We're hoping to take those signatures to the government in Washington, D.C. and the United Nations to insist on having emotional literacy as part of our education curriculum. Already countries like England is one of the first countries to start introducing emotional literacy at schools. And now it is a growing movement in all over the world.
Are you getting? Do you know any results from young kids, for example?
I only, because I'm so busy doing so many things, I don't look back and see what happened. I look at my kids, And one of them was very, very successful, and one of them didn't work.
Oh, well, 50-50, that can't be wrong, hey? Well, I just know that a lot of people don't want to deal with emotions. And I loved your explanation. Something that I really believe in, too, is if you sit with, for example, jealousy, there's a message in it. There's a communication in it, right?
Right. There's a code in it. There's information.
And what I picked up from the merchant priesthood is that it just really booted me up in terms of hold that higher frequency and transmute those energies, because the energies are always there. People have those. They're in the arsenal of human response, aren't they?
Right.
Yeah, so it's very exciting. I'm very excited about what you're doing.
Thank you.
All right. Well, so we're almost done. Do you have any? Oh, do you want to talk a bit about Rowan's projects also? She did organic leather.
Well, Rowan, you know, as amongst the many conscious businesses we do, that one day she woke up screaming, organic leather. And I said, what? Organic leather? And we checked online, and she took the URL, and she built the website. And nobody have even talked about this. That was maybe 5-6 years ago. And she started to research the tanning and leather industry to find out that what probably the most polluting on the planet, the most toxic, and so on. So she basically created a couple of fashion shows and created a new company called Organic Leather. And she is now hoping to, she's working on turning a lot of factories and or reviving old tanning technologies using organic leather, means organically fed and organically tanned leather.
Hmm.
So working with organic farmers and organic tanners in many third world countries like Morocco and in India, where they still have that vegetable dyeing and so on. So she's reviving, and she's basically hoping to have an impact on the leather industry and make it more conscious.
Wow. And she has a website as well?
Yes, organicleather.com.
Hmm. She also looks to be one of the merchants herself, doesn't she?
She is. She has been my partner in every one of those projects I talked about. Actually, she is the one who inspires me. She is my muse, and she is the one who triggered my chivalry.
Ah, that's wonderful, because when I look at her intuitively, I go, well, she's got that same light coming through, where she really is driven at some level to make this kind of difference on the planet.
Absolutely.
So where can people buy this book so they can add to it or just enjoy it as it is?
Sure, they can go to actually sacredcommerce.com.
Mm-hmm.
They can buy the book from there. Next week, you can go, when you go to sacredcommerce.com, it will turn into a social media network,
mm-hmm.
where you can download the whole book for free.
Oh my, that's wonderful.
Absolutely, and you can contribute to it, and if you add some interesting stuff, we will include them in the next edition, and everybody will be honored.
How exciting. Also talk a bit about your YouTube performances.
Yeah, actually, I'm testing the idea of doing some media with it. So I'm in the process of doing 20, 30 little clips about, you know, from taken from Sacred Commerce. So I have 3 little videos up there. So if you go to YouTube and put Sacred Commerce or my name, Ayman Sawaf, you'll find 3 videos, one called The Drop of Joy, one The Fourth Bottom Line, and one The Concept of Emotional Intelligence. So I'm testing my visibility, how courageous, my courage level, anyway.
So you're going to be a movie star. That's the next thing, right? Well, Ayman, I've really enjoyed this, and I'm sure looking forward to your next book, but it may be a movie instead, eh?
Actually, there is a movie from Sacred Commerce, where Sacred Commerce, the merchant priesthood, started in Atlantis with Isis and Osiris. So we have a story, you know, a fiction book that will go from there all the way to now.
Oh, wonderful. When do we see that? When will we see that?
That's another year or so.
All right, so you guys are now down in Arizona. They're basking in some wonderful weather.
Oh, my God, so beautiful.
Is it beautiful?
It's beautiful.
And you're at Gabriel Cousins' wonderful...
Tree of Life Center.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, I've decided I need to lose some weight and de-stress a bit, so I came to work here and enjoy the beautiful desert.
Well, I love Arizona, but thank you so much for coming on to Paradigm Shifters. You're definitely a paradigm shifter.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, Ayman.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was an interesting talk, and I really recommend going into sacredcommerce.com and really getting involved. The book is... I think the thing that's happening to me as I read it, it's very infectious. It makes you want to kind of participate in this rising consciousness that's going to kind of feed the whole world, and we'll all have wonderful projects, and we'll all have everything, and it isn't a separative game anymore. Anyway, this I really enjoyed that. Thank you again, Iman, if you're listening. This is Veronica Entwistle, and I'm going to come back on next Tuesday at 4 o'clock West Coast time on Radiance. And you know, I'm going to do the family again, because I felt like we were talking about it in the 3 minutes between shows, and it's such a huge, huge thing. I mean, even just talking to Iman and experiencing how they're, the souls and spirits carry on certain kind of gifts and certain talents and certain drives and so on. I know that in families that goes on as well. I think we just need to talk about families next week, and we're going to see if we can get even greater comprehension on from you as well as from the guides and angels and from me and books and so on about the family and what are we all doing together and how can we heal it? How can we unhook some of the more traumatizing competitive events that come up or karmic things that sort of seem to submerge us at times? And I'm going to be on with Jackie Salvitti again on Thursday night at 8 o'clock, and we're going to be talking about, I believe we're going farther into releasing the rage and getting freedom from it. But I'm not sure. I wonder if that's ever going to be possible. I guess you'll have to tune in to find out. And Jackie and her team, she channels halfway through the show now, which is wonderfully elevating for all of us. So that's a good thing to tune into. And I can't remember who my paradigm shifter is next week, but the week after is Liz Mitten Ryan, who does the one with the herd, the horses up in northern BC. She was coming on a few weeks ago and she didn't show up, so I'm giving you a heads up. She couldn't show up. She had a crisis with some cats. So she's going to come on and talk about horses, and we're going to talk about the equine facilitated learning and so on, and that's going to be on the 20th. And so I have somebody to talk about between, but if you would like to comment on these shows, if you would like to suggest a show or a guest or so on, if you'd like to ask some questions, please email me, or if you'd like a session, please email me, Veronica at Veronica Entwistle, ENTWISTLE.com, Veronica at VeronicaEntwistle.com. And I really do enjoy having your comments and your feedback and basically just having you participate in the whole thing. I hope you've noticed that we now finally have music, and that is from Amrita Cottrell, who used that very music. Well, she learned that very music and used it in order to heal herself of breast cancer, because as we know, sound healing is a very huge thing these days. So we're adopting it at the beginning and end of the shows. And that's this show for this week, and we'll talk to you next week. This is Veronica Entwistle saying many blessings to all of you. Thank you for listening.